I said, "Brr, it's cold in here. There must be some doctors in the atmosphere. Oh, wait, there's only one." Technically, that should go with O-E-O-E-O. Ice, ice, ice. Didn't you have those as, like, sports things?
I don't think so. Those are unfamiliar at all.
Yeah, because it was, because we were cool. Somebody out there has got to get it.
Sure. I'm sure somebody does. Dave might. It feels like a Dave thing.
It was a high school thing. Sports team, Zach. Oh. None of our listeners are going to get that.
Oh, yeah. You got a point that none of our listeners are into sports.
Nobody's going to know. Deck the TARDIS with some toys. Yeah, fa la 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 la. What's the doctor got in his pockets? Fa la 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 la.
I think the rhyme got away from you there a little bit. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And guess what, Zach?
What is it, Cassie?
It's snowing outside! The sky is falling down in little... I was going to try to make it like it was... Like the sky was on fire, and then I realized, oh, that's actually super insensitive considering what this state has been through in the past 6 months.
Yeah, considering what LA literally was on fire 6 months ago.
I had to immediately abort the joke.
Yeah, I was about to be like, I can't even joke that it's snowing outside. It's so hot right now. I mean, it's hotter, and I understand it's hotter in New York. It's like over 100 there right now, which is wild to me.
Yeah, but, it's actually been a nice chill 75 to 85 degrees here. We're going to be talking about snowmen.
We will indeed, because today we're watching the Series 7 2012 Christmas special, The Snowman.
I fucking knew that we were going to get, I mean, it's hard not to.
Mm-hmm.
But considering that for years in this show, not in the podcast, we've been doing this for like a year. Years in the show, I've been going, something's up with snowmen.
I'm surprised you didn't expect like snow angels.
Fuck.
You make a snow angel and then all of a sudden...
The visage of an angel becomes an angel.
Exactly. You figured it out. No.
My God.
Today we're going to watch The Snowman, which is actually the return of a character I don't know that anyone expected, because it features a villain that hadn't been seen since the second Doctor. And only until right around the time of this episode, those stories were lost. So it was basically just like it existed in like lost media form.
Woo.
So this is kind of a surprise pull, but we'll talk a little bit more about them in the actual
you
episode.
You asking me, what is that villain?
No, you wouldn't know. You would have no way of knowing. That would be very rude. So I wouldn't do that to you. I have different questions for the Cassie Professy today, Cassie, that are a different kind of rude.
I mean, yay!
It's a little Christmas gift, a little Cassie Professy Christmas present.
Hooray, hurrah, and hoop dee doo!
So for starters, that villain I mentioned.
No, fuck you.
Is voiced
by
an actor who played a Marvel villain.
Oh.
Can you guess which actor?
Oh, no! Is it Robert California?
Robert California.
I can't remember his name ever. James Spader?
James Spader, yes.
Okay.
He comes in as Ultron. One of the Silurians. I'm the fucking Lizard King.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about James Spader at this point in time is I do not remember his name on the first go.
I do remember Robert California
because I think that's one of my favorite names of all time. Actually,
it's certainly pretty good. I think James Spader is a good name too.
Yes, but Robert California.
Yeah, Robert California is really hard to beat.
Jeez. Okay. Who else has been is it Tom Hiddleston? I mean, because Loki's kind of a...
DJT Hiddles? Yeah, Loki's definitely... I mean, even if he's now an anti-hero, he definitely was a villain at one point. I would definitely include him on the list.
But why would... Why would the BBC hire Tom Hiddleston
in 2012
to only use his voice
6 months after the Avengers came out?
To only use his voice, but also he is a British actor.
That is true.
I really wish I could rewind the tapes and see your face when I said Tom Hiddleston, because now you're putting on a poker face.
I'm always putting on a poker face, Cassie. You're not allowed to see through me.
Sometimes I can.
Can you see through this? I'm doing some things with my hands in front of my face.
Can you see through this, Zach? For those of you not in the room, which again is nobody.
We are home alone.
Okay, it's not Macaulay Culkin. He has not been a Marvel villain.
Yet. He's not been a Marvel villain yet.
Oh my god. Could you imagine?
He traps the Hulk home alone.
A Marvel villain. Can I ask what era of Marvel? What wave?
Well, because it spanned a long time. I can do that. I'll say it's not a one-off villain.
It's not Ultron.
It would not be Ultron in that case, no.
They
were not one-off. They spanned multiple films.
I always forget his name, too. Thanos?
Thanos was Josh Brolin.
Brolin Josh, got it. okay, because I know he's...
Josh Brolin. What?
Because he was a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he started in the first Guardians movie and ended in Endgame.
And then
Loki's also been in several of them.
A long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's between those two.
It's between those two for you?
I think so.
Okay.
Because it would be
interesting for them to rope in Tom Hiddleston is British. Josh Brolin is American. Neither one have really done a lot of television.
I know, but that's also why I'm thinking like, oh, man, what a slap to the face of having Tom Hiddleston's voice, not his beautiful, slimy little face.
You think they would hire Tom Hiddleston to play a villain and not let him grin like the Cheshire Cat he wants to be?
Yes, they absolutely would do that because BBC sucks. They fucking suck. I don't want to be right, but I also am going to be really upset if I was correct and then backed out.
Fair.
So I'm going to say
DJT Hiddles.
Yeah, that just seems like something cheeky that they would do. Like, oh, look at this actor who is literally on the top of the world right now. Let's not show him whatsoever. Or let's let him do a full Benedict Cumberbatch. We'll put him in a green screen room and let him crawl around as one would if they were also embodying a dragon. Because it's also one of those things, too, where if I am incorrect, it's like, ah, man, it was insert name
here. It was someone you didn't even think of at that point.
Oh, no. Yeah, but in order for me to not stab you on this couch.
Got to go with your heart, and your heart wants Loki.
My heart always wants Loki, man.
Well, let's do the second question here so we can get to finding out whether or not Mr. Hiddleston has a featured voice role in this episode. So this episode also features the return of the Paternoster Gang, which is a trio of characters you have met before.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely, it's not. I've
never even
heard
I
that
even
name.
Introduced them to you in the episode as the Paternoster Gang.
Nah. So nah.
It's three characters.
I never met those
they
people
were
ever
one
before.
Season ago.
Nope. No, they were not.
One was a human.
No.
And two were aliens. Well, two are not human. One is an alien, two are not human.
Am I supposed to get?
I will give you a point if you can remember either species the other one is.
No.
I'll give you an extra point if you can remember a name. Cassie's using her notes she's taken from all the episodes to try and see if she could trust them.
Damn it. Why is one of them just Amy is unique?
I will tell you, they weren't like bit players. They had a prominent role.
Okay, fuck off, Zach. You're banking on me forgetting. This is a hereditary issue. My father has severe memory loss. Do you think this is a fucking joke, Zach?
I think it's a little funny, yeah.
Do you think that this is a bit that I'm doing that I'm genuinely very upset at you for banking on me forgetting things?
I wasn't banking on it.
You absolutely were.
Yeah, I was a part of it. It was like I was going to be very pleasantly surprised. least, if you did remember.
I'm going to be the smartest jackass in this whole house.
Well, there's only two of us right now, unless you're including the cats, in which case then I still come in second.
Who's the top smartest jackass?
Well, she pretends to get hit by trucks, so we give her food.
She doesn't pretend, Zach.
I have the mid-season finale. Is that? Is
yeah,
that
so
something?
I'd look around that part.
You would look around that part. Okay, so they were in that episode. Yeah?
Sure. Could be.
Can you just fucking nod your head, blink your eyes, do something? Blink if it's a yes. That means yes, I think. Or you have hay fever. He's allergic to blinking.
Do I hay fever? I hadn't noticed.
So you said three?
Mm-hmm. There were three of them total.
Okay. Lizard person.
Okay, Silurian.
Potato man.
Potato man, okay. And then the third one was a human, so
okay. So lizard person and potato man.
Okay, so you're locking to that for 1 point. If you can remember, you get a bonus point if you can remember either of their
Zach,
names.
Zach, you're lucky enough
or
that
even
I've
the human's
remembered
name
that.
At that point.
You would be so lucky if I would remember.
Well, let's find out together if the villain of this episode is voiced by Tom Hiddleston and if the Paternoster gang consists of a human, a Silurian, and a Sontaran as we watch The Snowmen. Hey, folks, looking to add a touch of winter whimsy to your front yard, your desk, or your commemorative ice shrine? Then come on down to Uncle Frosty's Artisanal Snowman Emporium, where every snowman is lovingly hand-rolled, custom-styled, and organically accessorized with locally sourced carrot noses and ethically foraged coal buttons. We've got tall snowmen, short snowmen, dad bod snowmen, some with jaunty hats, others with, charismatic tilts. And this week only, our buy one, get one slightly smaller sale is on. These are not your average driveway ball boys, folks. These are limited edition, artisanally curated snow sculptures. Each one is a conversation piece. They're positively dripping with entertainment value. Come by today, right now. Bring a cooler, bring a tarp, bring a bucket, bring a friend. We have so many snowmen, and they are so very definitely permanent. Uncle Frosty's Artisanal Snowman Emporium, located right next to Jimmy the Jerk's House of Heat Lamps. And we are back from the snowmen.
Burr.
Happy birthday.
Actually, since they were evil spiky teeth, it should be happy birthday.
Unhappy birthday.
Happy unbirthday.
So what do you think, Cassie?
I don't know.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I did like them being clever with the, like, oh, we're going to introduce Chekhov's gun. In this case, it was a mind-swiping
the mind
parasite.
Worm.
So on the one hand, I was like, okay, little callback. Cute. We love that. I don't know.
Okay.
And I don't know because, like, I do really like Clara and I like how forward she is.
Mm-hmm.
She really is the embodiment of just, like, manic anti-doctor energy, which I really like.
They let her be really flirty with her first two appearances, like, especially with in Asylum of the Daleks, her character is with both the Doctor and Rory.
Well, that's also because she's, as far as she knows, trapped in a capsule. I can imagine being a woman alone in a capsule. You just kind of have to.
Your needs go unfulfilled.
Yeah, you get your kicks where you can find them.
Yeah, and when you're an unmarried woman in Victorian England, much probably the same. You were probably also just dealing with a lot of feelings at that time. I do. One thing I like that kind of goes untouched on in the story itself, I like that the father of the two kids very clearly is interested in Clara, but doesn't want to say it.
Yeah.
And so they just do a lot of like little nods where she's very like, or he's very clearly into her, but for societal reasons or what have you, they can't do anything about it.
So you have a gentleman friend.
You like, of all the horrifying things that get introduced to him in a span of time, the Silurian woman yeah, and her wife, the Sontaran threatening to blow things up.
The lizard person from the dawn of time and my wife.
The way you wish you could introduce yourself everywhere you go.
Oh my God, yes.
I'm a lizard woman from the dawn of time, and this is my wife. Although I think if you were doing it, you would be like, I'm a lizard woman from the dawn of time, and this is my wife.
Well, yeah, because the year is 2025, and that joke still hasn't died.
In fact, it only gets funnier the longer it goes on now.
My wife. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. I will admit, Clara is my favorite companion of... certainly of the modern series. I will say I have not watched all of the classic series, but
I think it's also the fact that the Doctor immediately jumps to, I'm sad. I'm living in a cloud. I'm a whimsical man living in a...
My best friend's died, and now I don't want to do anything
I'm
anymore.
I'm a whimsy man living up a spiral staircase in my box that's smaller on the outside in the cloud.
My staircase that he says is taller on the inside.
And then a woman comes along that I know, but I don't remember knowing her. And I think that's the part that really is getting my goat, is the fact that it's like, dude, well, but then on the flip side, I'm like, he didn't ever see Clara.
I will say,
the audience saw her.
As a man, if I'm feeling like really, really depressed and alone and needing to isolate, and someone really pretty comes along and gives me three compliments, I'm totally rebounding too.
Not me flashbacking to the day we met and you jokingly but only kind of proposing.
Because you complimented me three times. It's like Beetlejuice, but nice.
What did I compliment you on?
I don't remember anymore.
Aww.
You said I was funny, and then you said I was smart, and there was something else. But it was the rule of three.
It's not. I said three basic things.
Yeah.
I said you were funny and smart and most likely something along the lines of me knowing myself. It was something dumb like, oh, how chivalrous. And you went, marry me.
I don't remember the context of that anymore either. But, you know,
that's a much better impression of you.
Hey, you know, things have worked out so far.
Have they?
I got you to sit down and do a podcast with me, so clearly, at this point, you're stuck with me.
Wait till my lawyers get a hold of this.
Yeah.
This is entrapment. This is couch entrapment.
Yeah, I like this special a lot. I think there's a lot of really clever moments in it.
I appreciate a great deal that they are letting the Doctor dress up.
In his like big furry coat.
I like when the Doctor dresses up.
And his top hat.
Well, because like the Doctor, at least this iteration, his outfit is, for lack of a better term, timeless.
Mm-hmm.
I like that he goes to Victorian era London and goes, nah, it's time. It's time.
It's time for me to get a big coat.
Let me get a waistcoat
and a big hat.
Let me get a waistcoat and a big hat. Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, let's start from the beginning a little bit.
New intro.
We did in fact get a new intro.
Hooray!
That features Matt Smith's face being flown through a la the classic series intro. I love the visuals of this new intro.
It is very science museum still.
Which, you know what? Love those too. I love science museums and I love this intro, so it makes sense.
Like watching it, I went, this is just, if we were to do a live action Magic School Bus, this is what I would expect to see in the intro.
Yeah, it's very.
But instead, we have live action Magic Police Call Box.
Something like that. Yeah. The Magic School Box.
The Magic Tiny Box.
And his Magic Lunch Box, which has
Magic Lunch Box.
It has a memory worm in it.
Because my very first note, and I do think it's important to read it verbatim, was Egato G's, not the chompy snowflakes.
Yeah, because you're seeing little snowflakes that are descending from space onto Earth, and they have little faces in the middle of them.
Yeah, I hated that.
It was one of those where I was like, I feel like, I mean, I understand that you hate it, but I feel like you hated it a good way, if that makes sense.
I like that they went, all right, here's what's going on in the episode real early yeah. on.
This episode's going to be a little silly, but we're not going to pretend that it's not.
The thing that I really super appreciate about that is knowing right out the gate, this concept right here, the chompy, scary ass snowflakes, this is what is going to be the protagonist or the antagonist for this episode.
Yep.
Which I kind of love because it's not, nobody's trying to pull the wool over anybody else's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You are getting exactly what you get.
Yeah, and then you watch as this snowman gets made and starts repeating back what this child is saying.
They're silly.
Repeating back with the voice of Sir Ian McKellen.
Yeah,
doing just his like nastiest little voice he could come up with. They're silly.
Well, because when you had said Marvel villain, I forgot that X-Men was Marvel.
That makes sense. So. I don't want to say that I.
No, like, you were being cheeky.
I was being a little cheeky, but I didn't. But I didn't want to bank on, I didn't want to like gild the lily too much and tell you that it's before phase one, because then I feel like you'd get it immediately.
No, because I absolutely forgot that X-Men is part of
the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
Well, I can't help with that. So both of these problems had to do with your memory then. Although the second one you did get correct. The Paternoster Gang does consist of the human and a Silurian and a Santaran, so you do get that point for sure.
And I remembered in the middle of the episode that Strax is a nurse.
Yes, you did remember that in the middle of the episode. Strax is in fact a nurse. So good for you. You get 1 point for today's Cast Super Fasty. So you got that going for you. And then we watch as the little boy grows up to be Richard E. Grant.
That little boy has been in something else.
The little boy or Richard Grant?
Yes, both. No, we talked about Richard Grant. That kid, I recognize him from something.
Interesting. Okay. Because I can tell you Richard E. Grant is from a few things, some of which we've watched on this podcast. He's one of the doctors from Curse of Fatal Death.
We discussed that.
Yeah.
You said Love Actually?
I thought he was. I didn't see it. I'm going back and looking over his filmography again just to make sure I get it correct.
I'm looking back over his filmography.
His filmography.
While you're looking through that, can I just start spinning a weave?
Go for it.
Something I really appreciate that this show did,
mm-hmm.
and this is like the first time I feel like it's ever done it, is taking actual, it's a very simple scientific like theorem mm-hmm. that water remembers, but it is something that is actively being studied more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really appreciate that this is the first fucking time the show went, okay, cool. Here is actual science.
Mm-hmm.
Here's actual science. Let's weave it into whimsy. Let's see what degree we can take this to. How big can this problem get while still rooted in something that is technically true?
Okay.
I don't feel like we do that often in this show. And I appreciate when it happens because science or that water does remember. And that's like also if you want to get really witchy with it, that's why a lot of times like water, particularly water that's left out to be blessed by the moon, is then used in rituals. Mm-hmm. Water is very important.
Yeah, I do like when there's things that are like tied in a little bit to actual science,
Something like that, where it's like water remembers. That on its face is something that's like, okay, but how?
Well, it also like calls back to...
How does it remember? And then I enjoy the fact that this show answers that question of how. Because the real science-y answer is boring. It's so boring, in fact. I started reading the journal about it because I went, okay, cool. I'm going to start really getting into science. I got about a third of the way through and I went, this is not broken down to be understood by a child. So I had to put it away.
I do like the water remembers thing because it also sort of calls back to if you remember at the end, near the end of Tenant's run, the special The Waters of Mars, where all the water turned people into zombies on Mars.
Literally no, but continue.
So that's just, it's a callback there. Do you think this snow form is more or less dumb than his original appearance? Because in the original appearance of the Great Intelligence, he took the form of a robot Yeti, a la. And I know what you're thinking immediately. You're thinking of two different coasters in Disney parks that have a Yeti. And yes, that is exactly what I mean. The reason they bring up the London Underground in it as like part, it's like on a lunchbox that he shows the Great Intelligence, is because that robot Yeti terrorizes the London Underground in 1967.
I should like to see it, but also I have seen it on two different roller coasters in Disney parks.
And then just because we had, you had wondered what Richard E. Grant was from, I was wrong. He's not from Love, actually. I don't know where I got that from. I think I'm mixing him up with the guy.
Snape.
No, not Snape. He's the guy that was in Vincent and the Doctor. It doesn't matter. Everyone else is who I'm talking about.
Bill Nighy.
Yes, Bill Nighy. Yes. Oh, my God. Thank you. Bill Nighy, what you probably know, Richard E. Grant was from a couple films that you might have seen. He was in the seminal classic Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Yes.
More likely, I think you might know him from the movie The Little Vampire.
That is a name I have not heard in many years.
Yes, he plays the father of Jonathan Lipnicki in that movie. I had looked that up, but as soon as I saw Little Vampire, I went, oh, that's probably the one Cassie is like subconsciously remembering.
That's one that I saw once as a child. I don't think I particularly liked it very much. I'd like to give it another watch.
That's surprising.
I was way more into witches as a kid.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. If you had heard, oh, hello, from the movie, you might have thought a little bit different. But
well, yeah. He wasn't making movies back then.
He finds a really interesting way to play this character that has no body, only has sort of, there is sort of a disembodied intelligence. And so it's like slowly growing more intelligent as the episode goes on. And so there's a very like almost drone effect that it has. It was like, they're silly. Because
he's mimicking.
Else. Yeah, he's mimicking at first, but it sounds very like tepid. And then by the end of the episode, he sounds very like, we must get the snow together and I must get the ice and blah, blah, blah. And it sounds very much more authoritative by the end of it in a way that feels like
character's he's an actor.
Growing.
That's his literal job.
Yeah, I'm commending the job he has done for a character that only is a voice.
I appreciate that Strax is the perfect buffoon. He's so smart.
Yeah,
he's such a good nurse. He's also dumb as rocks.
Go get the memory worm. Yes, sir. How did I get here? Oh, look, it's snowing. Looks like it's been snowing for a while. Why would I go get the gauntlets? Do you want me to get the memory worm?
Yeah.
I had a friend that had a problem with the way the doctor specifically treats Strax this episode. Because her specific issue was that when the doctor calls him the potato one, that's just like the equivalent of like a racial slur to the Sontarans.
Yeah.
But I'm also just like, the doctor is clearly in a distraught place. And two, he's having like a back and forth with Strax. Like Strax is already teasing him in exchange. I don't know if that means that.
No, that doesn't give you an excuse to throw racial slurs out and
to
around.
Go like, you look like a potato. I do think that's like I said, it's a little racist for sure. I don't know. It feels weird because I feel like it's so fictional. It's hard to like get a proper feel for it, you know. But also the Sontarans are a dominant culture. They are only generally stopped by the doctor or their own incompetence. Otherwise, they will comment. They will blow up your entire planet and all of its people because they're a war race.
Well, because it's also the doctor disses him for being clever.
Yeah, he's like, being clever doesn't suit you. I'm the clever one, because he keeps referring to him because you could tell that the doctor is investigating. And so he's like, what gives you the impression that I'm investigating? And he's like, who do you think I am? And he's like, Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, Holmes.
I do like what he decides to investigate. By barging into Richard E. Grant's house, he's dressed up as like the most prototypical Sherlock Holmes you can think of.
Yeah.
With like the overcoat and the
prototypical, stereotypical,
I guess stereotypical. Maybe
because prototypical would be like a prototype, dude.
That's a fair point. My brain, I guess, isn't working today.
You're trying to also be
clever.
I do
not have a great intelligence. I only have intelligence. I have bad intelligence.
Clara isn't not Mary Poppins.
Yeah, Clara is the governess of these two children. On top of being a barmaid in her spare time, so she's working that grind set. She's working those double jobs, and so she. But she tells stories to the children, like about how she invented fish because she doesn't like to swim alone.
I dislike swimming alone. And that she was born behind Big Ben, which explains her acute sense of time.
I feel like, without giving too much away, we have a friend that is going to have a child soon. And so you're going to become Aunt Cassie in that case.
Yeah.
I feel like I invented fish because I dislike swimming alone is going in your back pocket of things to tell a child.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so excited to be sneaky. I'm so excited to be a little stinker.
You really get a. I also really like that when the kids run up to Clara when she first walks out, they're like, "I made 7 drawings and saw a dead cow. Can you do your special secret voice for us?"
And she just goes, "Oi."
Hello, mates.
Yeah.
Can you do your special voice for us?
Hello.
Hello.
It's weird how Clara's secret voice is also the same as your secret voice.
No, my secret voice is when I'm really busy at work or I'm really trying to get people to come over and talk to me when I'm working at the kiosk. And I start talking a little bit like this because you don't not know that this isn't how I sound.
That's your secret customer service voice.
It does make people seem to respect and believe me a little bit better. They go, listen to this little southern child. What she is saying must be true and is a fact.
Your secret angry voice on the other hand is, hey.
Get out of my sandwich.
No, that's not secret angry voice. There are secret angry sounds.
What are those?
That's just a mom sound.
You've developed.
Ask any mom or auntie. That's just or when I'm trying to get somebody's attention. did I ever tell you about that? Did we ever unlock that?
I don't know.
So when I was younger, if ever somebody did something nice for us, you know, we spent a whole day at so-and-so's house petting horses and doing whatever. My mom had a lot of friends with horses, right up front and center. So if we were doing something, though,
that's why you talk like that sometimes. You're a bit of a cowgirl.
And we needed to say thank you. My mom or my aunt, one of them would go. And what you can't see because this is an audio form.
Bullshit. Sitcom ass mom behavior.
And something else that goes with that because this is an audio medium, our listeners can't see, is that there is a specific like purse of the lips and a look over. But even worse, I've started doing it to other people and I get really mad when they don't know what I mean. Zach.
Along this journey, there's been this underlying plot about the previous governess that died and drowned in the pond out front of their house.
Yeah, interesting. The pond. You don't think I didn't clock that right away?
Yeah, you get to say one word, only one word that will get him.
Which also, before we really dive into, or before we dive into that, one word game.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be so clever,
right?
Jesus, could you imagine?
Yeah.
Could you imagine you only being able to say one word?
Maybe.
Because like in this dynamic that we have, like you're usually the wordy one. And so like I'm not often the one to say a lot. But if you were in an up or you were in a space where you could only say one word, like we would
crazy.
We wouldn't have a podcast. It is crazy.
Buck wild.
That's two words.
One.
One is also two words.
Hyphenated.
I suppose it is hyphenated. But anyways, all I'm saying is that you have to be a very clever, smart, handsome person to play a one-worded. Nope. I did not say that. I said smart, clever, and handsome. That's all you get.
But
no buts.
Okay.
Anyways,
And that's our podcast, everybody. Thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm glad we could be here. I assume you're all clapping with us. Otherwise, this is going to be real weird. Cassie isn't clapping with me, so I feel weird.
No, because I just keep on circling back around to how I think Mary Poppins is also part Time Lord.
Her TARDIS is a bag.
Yeah. Well, because specifically when the doctor hands Clara an umbrella,
mm-hmm.
I went, okay, just fucking put a parrot at the end of that. Like,
have a talk.
Yeah. I'm also upset because I went, oh, umbrella. In most shows and in most cases, if you're falling from a great height, allegedly you can use that to gracefully float down to the ground.
But no, they didn't go down to the ground. They went up in the sky.
Well, they went up in the sky. And then turns out vapor doesn't stop ice.
No, it doesn't. So. We got a little ahead of ourselves there because as I was talking about the governess that drowned in the pond, and then the pond froze over and they didn't find her body for a month until the pond melted.
How deep is that pond?
Right? Because it looks like it's just a fountain.
Like, that was part of my thought was, first of all, how fucking... Well, if it was extremely cold and it froze solid and there was, like, a level of snow and ice on top of it.
Yeah.
And provided we don't see what the governess is wearing, but if she's wearing anything remotely similar to what Clara's wearing, if she's... in blue and green, then yeah. There is a non-zero chance.
And there's also a very good chance that maybe they had more water in it back then, and now they have less specifically, so no one else drowns in it.
I suppose. It's silly on its face, but it's also something where I'm like,
It's silly enough. It's silly,
it's
but
it's
not
the same
a...
way that you can lose your phone in the couch, you know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's one of those like, oh man, it happens.
Yeah, that's where suspension of disbelief comes in, is you yep. just like you can just be like, I don't need to sit here and question how you guys have spent the last year with your pond. Your dead pond. But then because of that, as all this snow and ice is as all the snow is coming to life, so too does the water form into ice. And the ice forms the memory of the governess who barges in the room going, you have been very naughty.
Could you imagine how traumatic that is? When Claire was sitting there going, talking about all these tall tales, and she said, yes, there's a whimsy man about to come right through this door.
I will kill you all. Let me eat you. That's the way to do it.
Ew, could you imagine if she did eat something full of blood and guts? Then you would just see...
It's blood trailing over an ice sculpture.
Red insides. Through her ice. Yeah.
And then they run into the other room and the kids are like, where's your friend the doctor? And then this little puppet pops up, this little Mr. Punch. It's just like, doctor? Who he turns around and like has the puppet do he's doing so much with the puppet for no reason other than to be a little shithead,
a little whimsy man.
Has the puppet press the sonic screwdriver to shatter the ice woman, and then as he stands up, Mr. Punch kisses him.
Oh, I missed that.
He goes, oi. That was one of the times he said oi.
Oh yeah, we should watch this again, but every time somebody, specifically the doctor, says, oi, take a shot.
So, yes, they start running through the house. And then as they're trying to get away from the ice woman who reforms, they manage to get their way down the stairs where they are stopped by the gentleman who is the father of these two kids. And the doctor's only defense is, no, I'm Clara's gentleman friend. And we've just been upstairs kissing.
In that moment, the doctor went, what do humans do?
And then immediately the dad's like, I don't like him. I'm going to throw him off the building.
And then in comes
his former governess as a giant ice sculpture threatening the family.
And then the lizard woman from the dawn of time and her wife.
Yeah, that's just such a fun little beat that takes a break because it's been very tense for a few minutes as that like ice sculpture has chased them around. And so they grab an umbrella. They make their way up to the stairs onto the roof. The doctor and Clara along the way have a fall, and that's in a sexy pose.
Oh, because her bustle got stuck.
Yeah, her bustle got stuck in the window, and so naturally the thing the doctor says is we're gonna have to take those clothes off.
Yeah, in the porno version of this. Oof. I'm sure somebody has made one.
There has to be. There's no way there's not Doctor Who porn.
This is a shout out to one friend in particular. You know exactly who you are.
We are giving your mission, should you choose to accept it, is find us. Doctor Who porn. This
but
podcast
only
will explode.
Only the good stuff. I don't want none. This is a family podcast.
How
your mom listens to this. Never mind.
Never mind. This podcast will explode in 60 seconds. Yeah, so they land on the ground, and the doctor like basically plays hot potato with the umbrella back and forth for a minute. He's like, "Do I have a plan? You figure out my plan. I won't tell you my plan. I've got who knows if I have a plan." And the entire time, Clara is just like, they're doing like a playful bit, and Clara's just like, "Well, I know about your ladder, magic man." And then they climb up into the clouds and get onto the TARDIS because in case Matt Smith's doctor wasn't fucking Peter Pan enough for you, now he lives in a cloud.
Yeah, like I said, he's the fucking whimsy man in the clouds. Now, it did give such visual interest as, oh my God, it did give me the same, like, visual. I will refer to it as star eyes. It's like when you like something so much that, like in Steven Universe specifically, when something is like really exciting to Steven, like mm-hmm. when he looks up, he just got stars in his eyes. So that's what happens with me sometimes. But seeing the TARDIS amidst these, like this low-lying rolling fog, the only way to reach it is via spiral staircase. It reminded me of the Elephant Love Medley from Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, it's a very, very, I want to say similar visuals, because it's a very warm tone scene versus this very cool tone in the sky. But there's a very, the Murray Gold has really like put together a very nice piece, or as they're climbing up the stairs and you get the majesty of them becoming friends, really, in this moment as they come up to the TARDIS. As they're being chased by a crazy ice woman. And then they get to the TARDIS as always, whoever is about to be the companion is just like, "We're not getting in that tiny little box. This is really sad." And the doctor's like, "That is no more a box than you are a governess." And so she's like doing her like comic protest just for the doctor to walk in and flip on all the lights at once to be all dramatic, like, "Look at my house!"
Which is also nice for us, the audience, seeing the new interior of the TARDIS.
Yeah, I know you didn't care for it much when we saw it.
I still don't. I like warm tones.
Yeah,
but
I really miss... Matt Smith's first TARDIS is still S tier TARDIS. That might be my favorite TARDIS design ever. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm.
This new one does feel very much like a machine. It feels more in line with the classic series TARDIS, especially with the center console being like really hexagonal. But God, I miss it so much. I immediately miss the original TARDIS design.
Yeah,
the original TARDIS design, but the previous TARDIS design. Excuse me.
Yeah, the original TARDIS design sucks.
And I really like that as Clara's like does a couple laps around the TARDIS does a really long lap around the TARDIS. She comes in and the doctor's like, "Go ahead and say it. Everybody does." And then she very cheekily goes, "It's smaller on the outside." "Oh, OK, that's a first." And I'm like, "That can't be the first."
And then she asks, "Is there a kitchen?"
Another first. I just like making souffles. No other reason to bring that up.
At that fucking moment, the doctor should have gone, "Hey, wait a second.
What's your middle name? Are you or are you not in need of eggs?"
Eggs. Eggs.
Eggs. Egg, 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 egg.
Exterminate.
Wait just a second here, Miss Clara. You're a barmaid in that bar. Do they happen to have...
I will, getting ahead of myself a little bit.
Plungers?
That just means that Doctor Who does believe in reincarnation. Anyways.
I mean, he sort of is a manifestation of reincarnation.
Yes, but it's the specificity of now we have seen Clara in...
We've seen Osmond and we've seen Clara Osmond Oswald.
Yeah, we have seen three different iterations of the same person.
Yeah.
Which is also the, like, I'm sure that there is another time dilation theory or time theory. Because, like, there is the one of, like, in every universe, like, our universe is so small compared to the vastness of space.
Mm-hmm.
And there is not a single thing against. There is no documentation that says we are the only ones out in the vastness of space. Mm-hmm. Similarly, there is a like impossibility that you are the only you. Like there are several other versions of you in the other galaxies and what have you. So this could very well just be the, oh, cool, we're seeing all of these different versions.
So you're thinking it might just be a coincidence that they all look the same?
No. No, because it's not about looks. It's also personality.
Okay.
You know, so it's a, like, alternate universe is more or less what I'm getting at. Because okay. We don't know how, or we didn't really get a clear understanding about how Oswina Oswald got on a ship
on the Alaska and then crashed and became a Dalek. Yeah, we didn't really see.
And then this one is Victorian era London.
Yeah.
You know, there's this is not the same person, but it is. So my theory is alternate universes, which also means that there's an alternate universe, Rory and Amy, but
one of them is from Pete's world.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to you learning a little bit more about Clara, because like I said, Clara is my favorite companion. I will say I prefer her. She also goes on to continue to be 12's companion, and I prefer her dynamic with 12, despite 11 being my favorite doctor.
Can I say I'm really excited for 12?
I'm looking forward to when we get to Capaldi as well. Capaldi is also written by Moffat, so it'll have probably a similar aura, but it will be a different vibe just from a different actor. Anyway, getting a little ahead of ourselves here. And then Clara gets yanked off a cloud by the Ice Woman and falls to her death.
Hey, Zach, have you ever seen images of what it looks like when people fall to their deaths?
hit terminal velocity?
Certainly isn't that.
Yeah, she's...
She would be human meatbag pudding. I'm not even kind of... Okay. So this is a shout out to the Hollywood Museum of Death. They have so many pictures. Like it's sad and it's gruesome. I don't recommend going if you are weak of heart and a coward, but they have photos of like people that have jumped to their deaths and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought of it, but human skulls are just kind of like gross little eggs.
Yeah.
You fall at terminal velocity.
Yeah, the fact that there wasn't, it wasn't even just that there was
scrambled brain all over the pavement. You would not be fine.
Do you think maybe her bustle nestled her fall a little bit?
You know what? I didn't even consider that. That must be it. The power of love saved her.
The power of butt saved her.
Yeah. Yeah, the doctor's magic fucking saved her. Anyways, it just suspension of disbelief.
That was one of those where, well, the doctor does make at least a strong case that he's basically trying to plead with the universe to give him this one. Just give me the one. And then the universe says, we'll give you 5 minutes. We'll give you 5 minutes. She'll still look cute.
I don't like how insistent the doctor is on giving her the key.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels very... desperate.
Come to my
boy.
House.
Just please come over. Please come over to my house.
Please come over and play Xbox with
me. Please, come on and adventures with me, please.
No one will play Halo with me anymore. All my friends, I haven't talked to any of my friends since high school.
It reminded me of like some of the guys that I would like talk to in college where I'd be like, hey, yeah, I think I'm going to go to the beach. Do you want to come and hang out with me? And they'd be like, my roommates are gone. Do you want to come over? And I'd be like, no, I'm going to go to the beach. Do you want to hang out? But my roommates are gone. You want to come over?
No.
Like, no, I don't. I'm going to the beach.
The doctor then has to... Basically, he's like, I have to save the day because maybe the universe will give me one gift. Will give me just this one gift.
Please!
And it's like, I remember in Tennant's, like, last speech where he's like, I don't want to say I could do so many things if I don't save Wilf right now. Please don't make me do this. I could do so much more. And I like that through line that these doctors are really like trying to plead with whatever God they do or do not believe in.
Yeah.
To help them.
Whatever
out.
Powers might be, whatever chance has in store for them.
And so the doctor thinks he has a solution by going down to Richard E. Grant's house and saying,
hey, you, but here, you made this kid, you made this intelligence up when you were a kid. He's like your imaginary friend, right?
He's like, yes, I have seen him when I was a child.
And then the orb going, nuh-uh.
Yeah, the doctor undoing all the filters so he sounds exactly like child Richard E. Grant. And when that happens, I like Richard E. Grant's the way he plays it, where he starts to like shrink into himself. He looks like a child that's about to get grounded.
Oh, he's really good at eye acting.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even just his eye, it was his neck.
Well, yeah, but he specifically then did something that, like, I will just call the dog whale eye, too, where he, like, kind of pulled his neck in, but then was, like, looking up at the doctor.
It was a little bit like a wounded puppy, yeah.
Yeah, it was dog whale eye.
A dog that just tore up a pillow. And so the doctor's like, oh, I've got a great idea. And so he hands in this box, and he's like, what you want's in the box? And he's like, oh, great, fantastic. And he opens it up, and it gets bit with the memory worm again.
Also, can I just say, memory worm? Kind of hot.
It wriggled around, and it's all fleshy and lumpy. Uses teeth. Yeah. What more could you want? And yeah. So it keeps gnawing and
could
gnawing
away.
Could
you imagine being a worm that went from living inside of a jar to then living inside of a lunchbox of the London Underground?
And then getting to live on a hand.
But because of the worm,
his brain,
the doctor cleared up enough space
for the great intelligence to upload himself.
That's where I was like, oh, good callback with the worm. And then that happened and I went, I've mixed feelings now.
See, I don't mind the idea of the great intelligence, like, being able to slot himself in the empty brain, because that does make a sort of sense. Like, he's a disembodied intelligence. This is an unintelligenced body. Just put them together.
Yeah, I suppose.
But then for some reason, to really showcase that's what happened, he's all blue and icy. Like, he looks like Martin Short's Jack Frost.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that's just like, this feels strange.
I would have been upset if they didn't indicate in any capacity that he was now a snowman.
Yeah,
I guess he was being animated then by, because my understanding at that point is like, the intelligence worm is just sucking and sucking and sucking. And he is making, he is making this body forget how to live. Mm-hmm. So the great intelligence comes in and reanimates it. But then after.
Yeah, because the great intelligence has been around that guy for 50 years. Like, he's probably got to be like, he's younger than 60. So that character is suddenly dealing with decades of his mind being wiped.
Yeah. Could you imagine that's kind of how dementia works. Your body, your brain forgets how to operate. Yeah.
That worm sounds a lot scarier when they call it the dementia worm.
Sorry. I mean, we could give it a cuter name like Splash Mountain.
Which also gives you memory loss when you bonk your head on something.
Yeah, or gives you memory loss because you're spending so much time complaining about how soggy your underpanties are.
Hey, you leave me out of this.
I never said you were part of it. I just said you're underpanties.
But you were thinking it.
I said underpanties. I'm so glad to know that you were underpanties.
Look, so I like to feel protected, you know? Mm-hmm. Protected and secure, everything contained.
The orb turns to water.
Now I remember now.
It begins raining.
So elsewhere, Clara finally dies from having her neck snapped and her skull broken and all of her spine shattered.
Oh, my God. Scramble egg.
She finally remembers she's supposed to be pudding. And then as that happens, the whole family is crying. And that sense memory is so strong, it makes the great intelligence melt and turns the melting.
She's been the governess for a year. They would not have that big of an emotional response.
Yeah. She's been the governess for a year and she spent, I think they said, the last month gone.
Yep.
And so the children and the father, I understand, because the father's like, oh, no. she was my last chance of getting married again.
Oh, no. She was so unbelievably pretty. Pull that. And so young.
And supple with her flesh.
And so vibrant and full of life. Anyways.
And so she finally dies, and that makes a whole family crying on Christmas Eve is what's strong enough to turn the snow into saltwater rain.
And that's the part. That's where it loses me. It's the power of fucking Christmas. Are you kidding me?
It's not the power of Christmas. It's the power of being sad on Christmas. For daring to be sad on Christmas, you have melted the great intelligence.
Oh my God, daring to be sad on Christmas Eve.
And then Clara finally dies. And that's when the doc, and when they go to their grave, the doctor finally sees the gravestone.
Well,
says,
no,
Clara Oswin Oswald.
She specifically tells the doctor to run.
Run, you clever boy, mm-hmm. and remember.
Yeah, and that's exactly what
Oswin
which
said.
Which I do kind of like that callback.
Yeah,
I forgot. Yeah, and I'm really glad that they went, oh, you don't remember? Here you go! Flashback!
It's a very, like, that's the thing, it's a nice subtle callback. Like, it's not something that they, like, really threw in your face.
Yeah, like fucking souffles.
Yeah, I mean, the most thing that Oswin did when she had said it was she, like, then looked at she gimmed the camera.
Yeah. She goes,
and remember, right, audience? This Clara does not do that. This Clara just says it and then dies, as well she should.
Yeah.
And the doctor.
Good riddance, Victorian era Clara.
with your bustle that gets you stuck in windows and your umbrella that pulls down my ladder. And then the doctor sees the gravestone and puts together that her full name is Clara Oswin Oswald. And he goes, oh, that's the same girl that died twice. That's impossible. And I do wonder if there's a little part of him that wonders if he can find out how Clara did that, if he can save Amy and Rory.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the reason he went into a big mope state was that he was like, they're stuck. They're stuck and I cannot do anything about it. But then Clara comes along and he's like, someone has done it. Someone has died twice. I can prove this case.
Someone has died twice. I need to find the third version of her.
And she's somewhere in 2013.
Yeah.
Because they do a crossfade from the gravestone from when it was new to the modern day. And Clara's running through the graveyard going, oh, this is a shortcut. And her friend's like, this place creeps me out. And she's like, that's fine. I don't believe in ghosts. Teehee.
I ain't afraid of no ghost.
I ain't afraid of no sleep.
I ain't afraid of no bed.
And that is the end of our episode where we find out that there is another Clara out there for the doctor to find that will be his companion for the rest of the season. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler. I feel like that's pretty well telegraphed.
What?
But I am very curious to see how you feel about her. Because like I said, she is my favorite by a pretty large margin. Like
it's an ongoing conversation that we've been having that it seems that most of the women in the show are written one of two ways. They're either just there,
mm-hmm.
or they are specifically like smart mouthed, ballsy, flirtatious women. and it's a conversation I've been having of like, hey, if there's going to be women representation.
Mm-hmm. If you've got to do a stereotype,
I prefer smart mouthed
and sexy over over dumb.
Yeah.
Over dumb lamps. Yeah.
Yeah. I could you imagine if they had a woman in your period? No, a woman that was cast in the same light as Strax, where she's just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Smart and dumb. Like
I feel like I've seen that in shows. I can't immediately name one. But I feel like that's been a thing where someone is just like, I'm just a dumb lady. I don't know anything.
I mean, like you say that there is literally, I mean, I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sometimes what they do in Disenchantment. But it's like everybody does have like their little redeeming moments where like the housemaid like will pull out a knife and like chase after a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Even Bean is a little bit like that. It's something that I have been noticing more and more is just repeating patterns. And based off of what I've heard you talking about in future stuff, the patterns do not cease.
That's just the way Moffat seems to write women. He does that in most of his shows. We haven't really watched Sherlock, but he has. She's not really written as like his love interest in the original books, but in. All modern material, generally speaking, Sherlock Holmes' love interest is Irene Adler.
Okay.
And he writes Irene Adler to be very much like River Song, this very sexually confident, hyper-intelligent, femme fatale kind of character. It just seems to be the way he likes to write female characters. Now, granted, he also likes to write male characters as kind of dopes, like dopey little dorks.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that they're unintelligent. Like, Rory and the Doctor have both had plenty of times where they're, you know, very smart people.
Yeah.
But they're generally, like, he has women. He likes to write Bugs Bunny. Very, very, like, sexually confident, like, yoo-hoo, boys kind of women. And also, like, geez, I'm just like a little guy. No one would pay attention to me at all. He likes writing the two characters Bugs Bunny likes to pretend to be. And all of his villains are Daffy Duck. That's one of the things that's interesting is, like, right now, that dynamic you can kind of do with Matt Smith. You can do a bit where she tells him not that she's not going up the ladder first because she's wearing a dress. And the Doctor goes up and she makes a clear reference that she's looking at his ass. That works when it's Matt Smith. It's weird if it's Peter Capaldi, who is 40 years her senior.
Yeah.
So the dynamic intrinsically had to be different when he changed. And I think that's why I prefer it, because we'll get to it when we watch it. But there's just a different energy between them than I think any other Doctor and companion have. And part of that is, I think, because of Capaldi.
I wonder, too, how much of it is like when we very first started with Eccleston. We had Eccleston and Rose, and we were like, okay, cute. Like, they have kind of like a older brother, younger sister dynamic.
Yeah.
But this is the first time that they're like, oh, we really get to lean into it.
And then we had both Rose and Martha and Amy, to a certain extent, all have some level of, like, romance with the Doctor.
Attraction, at the very least.
Yeah. They all express some level of attraction with the Doctor, and a lot of what Donna does is expressly saying she's not interested in the Doctor. Like, it becomes a big point for them that they are not interested in one another. But with Clara, they do it a little bit, but I think it's because they transition from Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi, so they have to make it clear that it's not about that.
And in both iterations that we've seen her so far, she is extremely flirty.
Yeah.
And she is extremely smart.
Yeah. And so I really like where they go with her when they put her with someone that you just kind of can't do those with.
And I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are getting way ahead of ourselves. So I'm apologizing.
And by we, I mean you.
Yeah, I am. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to. Well, that was more about Moffat's writing, the way Moffat writes women. He deliberately puts himself in a different box. And that's what I'm looking forward to. Anyway. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season, especially because it builds up to the 50th anniversary special, which is a big deal, I certainly think. We're going to have quite a wind up to that. But first, we get to meet Clara proper in the next episode called The Bells of St. John.
Hmm.
I wonder if that strikes any thoughts for you as a Catholic.
Like John the Baptist?
Yeah, just The Bells of St. John.
Okay, but which? There's like so many.
Well, maybe we'll find out. On the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my John? Zach, I need to know.
Who is indeed?
All right. Good night, I guess. Or good morning.
Whatever time you're watching. Good time stream.
Good 24 hours.
Good business. Good business. Julymas, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this episode, because if I can brag a little, I think this was my new favorite ad we've ever come up with. I just had so much fun with that. Like, as soon as I came up with the idea, I laughed until I was done with it, and I had a great time putting that together. Anyway, if you haven't already, please make sure you are subscribed to this podcast wherever you're listening now. If you'd like to find links to all of our socials or other places you can listen to this podcast, you can find it all at wimdpod.com. That's WIMDPOD.com. If you'd like to support us directly, you can find us over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Special thanks go out to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, and Travis Aiken. Next week, we get to meet the real Clara Oswald and find out one of the many, 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 many reasons the internet is bad is because it will suck your soul into a database in London. So assuming you keep your soul, we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Who's Days.